This is Star Logic, and you're listening to Goldcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the 71st episode of Guildcast for May 12th, 2007. I'm your host, Sean. On this week's episode, we're going to delve into the language of Guild Wars a bit and explore some class terminology. Now, I know I did a show a long time ago, like episode 2 or 3 or something, where I talked a little bit about game terminology, but this will be restricted to class terminology, like things like tank or nuker or things like that. I'll also go over some of the certain words for some of the more popular builds. This idea was originally thought up by Potter, one of my officers in my guild. But before I get into the show, let's just say hi to the people who asked to be mentioned this time. They include Da Bomb Sword, Onyx Sword Warrior, Demon of the Abyss, and Trickster Health Breath. As for game news, well, there really isn't too much game news. There was a few things here and there, but on May 1st, GuildWiki, at guildwiki.org, you know, that GuildWiki, they actually deleted all of their builds from their site. I'm not really sure why they did this exactly, but strangely enough, ArenaNet's official Guild Wars Wiki did the same thing, right about the same time. Maybe they're just trying to get people to stray a little bit from those cookie-cutter builds and, you know, just try to create their own. Now, I'm all for that, but I also believe that people should have some sort of starting point. Like, when I make a build, it was usually based off of a GuildWiki build with some changes here and there to maybe 3 or 4 skills that I thought might work a little bit better. So if you still need a place to go for build reference, you can check out pvxbuilds.com. That's pvxbuilds.com. It's also set up in wiki form, and it looks much like the Guild Wiki did, the build section did, except actually I think it's a little bit better. They have a few more features in there. And I think soon it should be as popular as Guild Wiki's build section was, but let's just hope that they have the server muscle to take the load. I've got some more news for the San Francisco meetup that we're going to do in late June. Now, I think many people are thinking that this is going to be some huge event and they're going to miss out, and you're really not. It's not going to be that big. It's going to be a few people. I'm basically going on a vacation to San Francisco because I've never been there. And I thought it would be cool, you know, since I'm out there, to meet Lady Sinea, because she lives out there. And I only really readjusted my time frame when I discovered that Cal Agram was going out there this summer too. So then I just changed a little bit just to go at the same time he did, so that all three of us could be out there. So, you know, if you can't make it out there, it's not really a big deal. We'll be taking plenty of pictures, and I'm going to try to record a show out there, like I said. I don't know what the theme will be or anything like that, but should be interesting, actually, to see how it comes out. Okay, so now for the details. It'll be on June 26th at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, that's San Francisco time, and it will be at Pier 39 in Fisherman's Wharf. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to read what Lady Sinea wrote to me in an email about a space that she scoped out. She says, "At the main entrance to Pier 39, there is an open plaza area where we can meet. It can be identified by a sculpture of a crab in the center of the plaza. It is right in front of the Hard Rock Cafe, and there are almost always people playing live music by the sculpture." So there you go. If you can find the Hard Rock Cafe, then it's just right there. And this whole thing will be really casual. It'll just be, you know, like a hanging out kind of thing. One thing I'd like to say, though, is that if you're under 16 and you want to attend this, you really need to get your parent or guardian to come with you. And if you are between 16 and 18, then you at least need to let your parents know where you are, because we can't be held responsible for minors, basically. And also, you know, we don't want young, unaccompanied kids traveling to downtown San Francisco to meet us. It's just not very responsible. And, you know, this is just for your safety and ours. Now for something a little different. I know this is a Guild Wars podcast, but with the recent release of Lord of the Rings Online, many Guild Wars players have started playing this newest MMO, including our very own Lady Senea and Khal Agrim. I played through it a little bit on the beta, and I absolutely loved it. It's a great game. But, you know, there's just no way I could dedicate myself to something like that, especially for a monthly fee. And, you know, since I do a Guild Wars podcast and everything, it would probably take away more time that I don't have. And, you know, and then the whole monthly fee thing, Guild Wars pretty much spoiled me there, so I can't see paying a monthly fee. But, you know, if you have actually branched out and you've played some Lord of the Rings Online yourself, and you're looking for a good podcast for some insight into the game, then check out Ringcast at www.ringcast.org. It's RINGCAST.org. It's hosted by some friends of mine, Brad and Liz, who have actually, they've submitted some stuff for Guildcast before. I think Brad's done an intro, or at least a voicemail. I think that's what he did, it was a voicemail. And I've actually been in two guilds with both of them also. But early on, before he started the podcast, we talked a little bit about, you know, starting the whole thing, and I kept telling him, you know, just go for it. This is going to be huge. Although I'm sure he didn't need me telling him that, because he really enjoys the game and playing the game also, and he's really good at it. So anyway, check it out. If you're into Lord of the Rings Online, check out ringcast.org. Have you ever spent some time in Heroes Ascent or Deldermore War Camp or Tombs just watching the local chat spam? E-Surge LFG, Bloodspike LFM, Stance Tank LF Oro Team, BP LF Orders, WTS Celestial Blade 15 greater than sign 50 20%. Okay, never mind that last part. Let's skip the trade terminology. That's a whole different show. But what does all that other stuff mean? While there are many terms for builds, we're going to focus on the more popular ones. Not only that, I'm going to tell you what some of the more general ones mean also, and what they're expected to do. Now, this isn't to tell you how to play your character, not at all. It's just certain classes can be expected to play certain roles. I know I talked about class roles on a previous show, so this will be the terminology for those class roles. Some terms are pretty easy to figure out, like E-Surge is a build named after the spell Energy Surge. Orders Necro, I know I've talked about before. It's just a necromancer who uses Order of Pain mostly, also Order of the Vampire a little bit. BP is Barrage Pet, which I know I've talked about before also, but let's go into some terms that I haven't covered before, or at least maybe I've mentioned but I haven't covered in any kind of detail. So let's start with the good old tank. When you hear the word tank, you think of a hulking armored vehicle crushing everything in its path, right? Well, that's the basic idea behind the warrior tank. You basically absorb the damage for the team, so everyone else can focus on doing the damage to the enemy. Another not-so-nice term for a tank is a whammo, which is basically a phonetical version of warrior monk. The biggest mistake most people make in calling themselves a tank is they go ahead and they equip 3 or 4 melee attack skills. Now this would be a warrior build. That wouldn't be a tank build, that would be a warrior build. A warrior is not always going to be a tank, and a tank is not always going to be a warrior. It's very important to make that distinction. An extreme variation of the tank is what's known as the stance tank. This warrior has nothing but stances and possibly self-heals to keep himself alive, while the enemy focuses solely on him, again, letting the rest of the party dish out the damage. A meat shield is another term for the act of tanking, although it's not really applied to the warrior. It's mostly what people call minions or pets. This goes along with the same theory as a tank, except used with an army of minions or pets to block the enemy away from the rest of the party. Also, when you're a tank, you'll be the one initiating aggro, which means that you're the one who catches the enemy's attention first. Now, aggro is a delicate issue, and not as easy as some people may think. You need to catch the attention of one certain mob without attracting too many at once. This involves watching for other roaming groups in the area, as well as their movement patterns, to determine the best time to grab one, instead of grabbing multiple groups at the same time. Now, tanks do not grab aggro and then run back to their party. This is a big no-no with tanks, and anyone who gains aggro initially will tell you that that's just something you don't do, because it pretty much brings the enemies back to your party, and then the enemies wipe out your party, when it completely defeats the purpose of tanking. So this brings us to another class role that also grabs aggro in a slightly different way, and that's the puller. Pullers can be any class, but they're usually rangers equipped with a longbow, which is the longest ranged weapon. Tank warriors with a longbow can also be very effective pullers. They pick one target, fire at it without entering the aggro bubble of other enemies, and then they actually run backwards to pull a certain group towards their party. Or actually, in the tank warrior's puller's case, they bring the group of enemies back towards them only, and not all the way back to the party, like I said. This is especially helpful in the situation I mentioned above, when there's multiple groups and you just want to fight one at a time. Sometimes this pulling method works especially well if you're a ranger and you're also a trapper. A trapper is a ranger equipped with powerful traps that can be set in one area and activated when an enemy walks over them. With the puller-trapper combo, you can set all of your traps in a tight area, like a doorway if possible, and then you pull the enemies back with your longbow, and you watch them just get annihilated when they walk on your traps. One thing to watch, though, is when you're a puller-trapper, don't bring a pet unless you keep them on heal, which is a new command that you can do for pets. But, you know, if you keep them on heal, it pretty much makes them pointless anyway, and it's a waste of a skill slot or two. And what will happen if you have a pet is your pet will run up to attack, which defeats the purpose of trying to pull them back, because then the enemy will stay up and fight the pet. So then you have all these traps set and they're up there fighting the pet. So let's go to the other side of the spectrum from tanks and pullers. Let's talk about the spikers. This word includes so many different classes and other class terms, but we'll just go ahead and take them one at a time. A spiker basically means someone who can cause a whole lot of damage at one time to a certain foe. This can also be done in a spike team situation, where everyone is on some kind of voice chat program, like TeamSpeak or Vent, and then they do a countdown, like 1, 2, 3, spike, and then everyone uses their high damage, low activation skills at one time to kill an enemy, and this keeps the team's healer from being able to do any kind of healing, because it just works so fast they can't even get a heal off. These are really mostly useful in PvP, but there's also some forms of spiking that's done in PvE on a little bit smaller scale. Trapping is actually one of these that I just mentioned, and there's also some assassin skill chains that work pretty well for spiking as well. Another example of spikers that have almost lost their effectiveness with the recent soul reaping nerf is the blood spike. A blood spike team consists of necromancers using blood magic spells like oppressive gaze, shadow strike, or vampiric gaze to spike targets. It relies on soul reaping and spirit spamming to power the team, which is no longer as effective. An elementalist's air magic can also be very effective at spiking, with spells like lightning orb, chain lightning, lightning bolt, etc. A nuker is an example of the opposite of a spiker, though. The nuker is an elementalist specializing in fire magic, with high damage spells like meteor shower that cause general devastation to a whole group at once. The nuker doesn't really cause massive damage immediately to a single target, but mostly massive damage to a group, with things like knockdowns and burning to help out. Now, many of these classes I've just mentioned, like Elementalist and Necromancer, fall into the category of a squishy. This term can also include other casters, like monks, ritualists, and mesmers, that have very low armor, hence the word squishy. You'll hear this term mostly in reference to defense and how easily a class can take damage. Well, in that regard, an assassin can be considered a squishy too, right? Oh, don't worry, that won't be my only assassin joke this show. It's become a tradition here on the show. Now let's get into the defensive or protective class terms. One of the most popular of these is the Bonder. Bonder is a term that refers to a monk who specializes in protecting the party by placing the spell Life Bond or Life Barrier on all or some of its members. In PvP, to help against spike teams or other cases where Life Bond won't help, Bonders sometimes will also carry Vital Blessing. Bonders generally run high protection prayers and divine favor to strengthen their maintained enchantments and provide energy to maintain them through Blessed Signet. Now, since the addition of Nightfall, Paragons have actually taken up the role of Bonder in high-end PvP matches. You may have also heard the term Boon Prot in reference to Monks. This role's effectiveness has been reduced dramatically in recent skill changes, but the main purpose of the Boon Prot was to use Divine Boon and other Protection Prayer spells. This combines the damage-reducing properties of Protection spells with the healing ability of Divine Favor and Divine Boon. Another term in relation to Team Protection is not held by Monk spells, but instead Elementalist spells, and that's the Warder. This isn't a really popular term, but you will see it occasionally. Most players will integrate wards into their monk build instead of making an elementalist who specializes in only wards, but doing so can be a nice trick for those PvP situations when you want to hide the team's protector. Wards are defensive, location-based area of effect spells that are placed at the location of a caster when they finish casting the ward spell. They cannot be moved or removed, and any non-spirit creature located within the ward will also be affected by it. In PvE, the ward is represented by a glowing red circle. In PvP, the circle is the color of the team that casts it. Wards affect allies or foes, but not both. And because they cannot be removed once they're cast, they are far more reliable than hexes or enchantments for stationary battles. Finally, the effects of different overlapping wards actually do stack on characters and creatures within range. The wards available include Ward Against Elements, Ward Against Foes, Ward Against Melee, Ward of Stability, and Ward Against Harm. Interrupter is a pretty self-explanatory term, but I wanted to go over this term mainly because it's misunderstood at times. An interrupter can be any class, the main ones being Mesmer and Ranger, but every class except the Dervish and Monk, I believe, have interrupting skills or spells. Of course, an interruption is when you prevent an enemy's spell from being cast. This causes the skill to fail, but still costs the enemy their spell's energy and recharge time. One thing to take note with interruptions, though, is there's a difference in interrupting spells and interrupting skills. For example, Power Drain, the Mesmer skill Power Drain, interrupts spells, but Web of Disruption interrupts any skill. Another thing is that Fast Casting, the Mesmer's primary attribute, is very useful in interrupts when you're trying to interrupt skills or spells with quick activation times. And if you interrupt with a bow, you need to have a clear line of sight to the enemy. So keep that in mind. With interrupting as a warrior, it centers more around knockdowns and dazing. But there are some interrupts that act as a hex that will actually interrupt your target the next time they cast a spell or use a skill within a certain amount of time. I could probably have a whole show just on interrupting alone, because it's such an interesting topic, I think. But, you know, I think I've covered the basics here. I think you get the idea. Now, a battery is a term that makes a lot of sense if you think about it. No, it's not like assault and battery. It's like the Energizer type of battery. It's something that provides energy. A battery in this case is a necromancer equipped with spells like Blood is Power, Well of Blood, or Blood Ritual, which actually lets you give energy regeneration to other party members at the cost of a percentage of your own health. So it's like you're giving life to you're trading life to give energy to your party. Recently, though, since Nightfall, there's a new class with some battery spells, and that's the Paragon, with spells like Aria of Zeal and Energizing Finale. The battery's role is almost always that of providing someone else with energy, so this term doesn't apply to those spells that give energy back to the caster, as is the case with many Mesmer Inspiration spells. And finally, one of the most important class terms you can ever discover, the Mule. A mule is a character that was created for the sole purpose of holding or storing items. You'll usually buy all the bags and runes of holding for this character, and then you'll give them to your character to use and basically store your less used items. I've created one just for materials, and then I have another one just for holiday items. And then I have one for weapon mods, and then I have one for green and exceptionally good gold weapons. So I have four altogether. Any class will work for a mule character. It doesn't matter about strength or anything like that. So, you know, an assassin works great for this. I mean, seriously, what else are you going to do with an assassin?
Big Daddy Goose.
Greetings, Extended Guildies. Goose here. As you probably already knew, my segment will be short tonight. But before I begin, I'd like to say a few words. First, I'd like to say that I appreciate all of the kind words that have been said about me in the forums. It's always good to know that something you do that you enjoy doing is accepted by others and is appreciated by others. So I'd just like to say thank you for the things that you've been saying. Second, I'm not here to replace anyone. I have no intention of becoming a regular on the show. I simply have some ideas that I would like to contribute. But I seriously doubt that my segment will be available for every episode. Plus, I would like to give some others the spotlight. I have no intention of overstaying my welcome. Having said that, let's get to the topic. Since this episode is all about class roles, I thought it would be important to talk about creating your first character. Now, if you're listening to this, chances are you've already created your first dozen characters. But that's okay. I'm here to talk to the new players who have not yet created a character, or the new players that are having trouble understanding the whole character creation process. So, for right now, let's just get back to basics. To create a character, log into your account, click on an empty slot on the bottom, and click Create. Now, there are two main types of characters to create. There's role-playing and PvP-only characters. Role-playing characters are also known as PvE characters, which stands for Player vs. Environment. A role-playing character progresses through the storyline of the game and levels up through experience. Through their adventures, they gain access to new skills, new items, and new areas of the map. They also gain a much deeper understanding of the world and the characters that inhabit the world. Role-playing characters give you the full taste of the Guild Wars universe. Then there's the PvP-only type character. PvP stands for Player vs. Player. These are characters that start out at the maximum level of experience. Once you create a PvP-only character, you have access to change their armor, their weapons, and their skills as you desire in between battles. A PvP-only character is only allowed to go into PvP battle. This means you can only use this character for combat. You cannot use this character to progress through the storyline or to take on quests or missions in the game. PvP-only characters should be considered strictly as competitive play characters. Once you've selected what type of character you're going to be, click Next, and you'll be given a choice of campaigns. The campaigns represent the three different chapters in Guild Wars. Prophecies was the very first Guild Wars game. Factions was the second. Nightfall is the most recent and the third in the series. When creating your first character, it is recommended that if you have access to Prophecies, you select Prophecies, as the Prophecies tutorial area for new role-playing characters is one of the best in the game. Plus, it will give you a much deeper understanding of the Guild Wars universe in general. Once you've selected your campaign, you will select a profession. Now, since Sean is going to talk about what these professions are, I'm not going to talk about them in detail right now. But let me give you the basics. The warrior is the perfect fighter. He's the one that looks like he's going to have trouble going through a metal detector. The ranger specializes in ranged weaponry. She also has the ability to command a pet and use several wilderness survival abilities. The monk is known as the healer. Monks are highly sought after for their healing and protective abilities, but some monks specialize in smiting abilities, which allows them to deal severe damage to enemies. The necromancer is the ultimate goth character. The necromancer deals in raising undead minions and stealing health from opponents, as well as several curses and hexes. The mesmer is the ultimate actor. She deals in illusion and deception, kind of like a politician. But unlike a politician, she's actually useful in a party. Finally, the elementalist deals with air, water, earth, and fire. Of all of the characters, the elementalist is one of the most powerful area of effect dealers, or AoE dealers. Elementalists deal massive damage to many foes across long distances. Once you've selected your profession, you'll select a gender. Gender has no bearing on the effect of your character. It's strictly cosmetic. In fact, from this point on, every decision you make in the character creation process will strictly be for cosmetic purposes. After you select your gender, you'll select your appearance. This is how your character's face and head and hair will look. Now, depending on the profession you pick, you'll have some options as to your hair, style, color, face, skin tone, but all of these are cosmetic and have no bearing on the effect of your character. So select your character's looks however you like, and then click Next. Now you will adjust your character's body appearance. This is the size of your body, as well as the color of the armor that you're wearing. The color of the armor can be mixed and matched. You can choose different colors for different pieces of armor, and your headpiece can sometimes be optional. You can select Show or Not Show. It's important to remember that this armor is only your starter armor. This is not the armor you're going to keep for the whole game, and these colors are not the colors you're going to keep for the whole game. Once you get into the game and you start earning money and you start collecting dye and you start buying new pieces of armor, you're completely free to change your armor look and change your armor color as often as you like. So the choices you make at this stage can be changed later. Your body size, however, cannot be changed. Select your size however you like, small or big, doesn't matter, has no effect on the character's abilities. It simply affects the way the character looks. Finally, give your character a name. Character names in Guild Wars need to follow a certain pattern. Character names cannot be one word. Names cannot be more than 19 characters and must be at least 3 characters. Character names should contain no special characters, such as the tilde key or the apostrophe or the question mark. Like the Riddler question mark. No, you can't do that. And it's a good idea not to use profane or offensive words in your character name. Trust me on this, you'll get kicked. Now that you've created your character, if you've created a role-playing character, you'll be treated to a short movie. Once the movie is concluded, you'll be dumped into a tutorial area. The tutorial area consists of easily identifiable tasks and quests, and very simple monsters. Monsters will not attack you aggressively, and you'll have helpful blue pop-up boxes on your right-hand side of your screen that will assist you in everything you do. If you've created a PvP-only character, you will still have some helpful pop-up boxes, but you will have no movie, and you will have no tutorial quests. From here on out, it's up to you to develop your character. And I'll be glad to come back and talk more about basics of developing your characters in future episodes. For now, thanks for listening, and this has been
Big Daddy Goose.
So that'll do it for another episode of Guildcast. As you may have noticed, there have been more and more contributors in the last few shows. Recently, I made a post in the Guildcast forums inviting listeners to submit segments to the show if they feel that they have something to contribute. Now, this has always been the case, where I've allowed people to submit segments and I'll review them for the show, but only recently has there really been such an influx of interest in this by you, the listeners. So now what I'm doing is I'm extending this invite to everyone officially, I guess you could say. Reading from the post I made in the forums, here's some criteria for submitting a segment to me. You don't need to be that guy who does the movie trailer voiceovers, but I would like you to have a pleasant radio voice. Pleasant radio voices do not include mumbling, talking with the mic inside of your mouth, talking with the mic in the next room, you know, things like that. Don't do a segment on something we already cover. There's so much to the Guild Wars universe that we don't cover already, like most aspects of PvP especially. If you feel like you have an idea to contribute, this would be perfect for you. If you're an advanced player and you feel like maybe we talk a little bit too much about beginner topics, then there you go. Submit a segment, an advanced segment for me, and I'll play it on the show if, you know, you meet all these criteria, of course. And just remember, I will still have the final word on what does or doesn't make it on the show, so be prepared for that. Also, keep your segment around 10 minutes or so, give or take, you know, a few minutes here or there. This is just a general guideline, mostly so I don't get 45-minute submissions. I would recommend running any segment ideas by me before actually recording anything, because I have a pretty healthy list of show topics, and I wouldn't want to intrude in on that. Or possibly, I might want to save your idea for that show's topic. Submitted segments must be edited and ready to add to the show. I shouldn't really have to do any editing at all. It should be ready when you send it. So, if you'd be interested in trying your hand at a podcast segment, either once or several times, record yourself in what you would consider a finished piece, a finished edited piece, and send it to guildcastsean@gmail.com. Again, guildcastsean@gmail.com. Don't send it to sean@guildcast.com because I have a size limit there and it won't go through and it'll just bounce back. If you'd like, which actually would a lot of people do, Lady Sinea does this, and it works really well, is if you have your own server and you'd like to upload something to your server, I can always download it from there at my convenience, and I think that would work out really well too. In the criteria I just read, I mentioned future show topics. In another thread on the forums in the show feedback section, I made a post, and it's actually a sticky post, and it's called Upcoming Show Topics. This is a list of episode ideas I have for future shows. So if you're interested in seeing what I have in store for upcoming themes, check out that thread. And I guess that's about it. You can email me at sean@guildcast.com, and you can email Lady Sinea at ladysinea@gmail.com. And as always, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.